Okay, what's going on?
AudioToYou.com.
The home of quality podcasts.
Stay tuned to this channel.
Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Shelton Muller.
Hi, and welcome to episode 119 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com, and with me on the line via Skype from Melbourne once again, Mr. Shelton Muller. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. I'm a bit tired, actually. I'm starting to feel the ravages of age, I think. I'm a bit tired. I have had so much on, really, that, you know, it's really quite incredible. And I wear quite a few hats
right.
in this industry, and you've got a receding hairline. I suppose it's a good idea to wear a hat or two. But I do. I wear so many hats. I'm a photographer. I do this podcast. I run 5minutephotographer.com. I have a magazine to publish.
Yeah.
How did I ever get myself into this mess?
Yeah.
I really don't know. But you know, it's great. I'd rather be doing this than sitting around hoping for the phone to ring and somebody say, "Would you take a picture for me?"
Absolutely.
But wouldn't it be nice if the world was made of peanut butter and you could just smooth everything evenly across your bread? You know. It'd be just fantastic.
Interesting analogy.
But at the moment, it's more like lumpy jam, you know?
Right.
But, I mean, it's jam, but it's
crunchy peanut butter. It's all
crunchy peanut butter, yeah. But it's good. And I just watched your video on AudioToYou.com.
Oh, okay, cool. Of Kath Skydive, yeah.
Absolutely, Kath Skydive. She's a brave girl.
She is, yeah. She did well.
You got to go to audiotoyou.com and watch Bruce's better half jump out of a plane. It's really... And you did an excellent job of that video, mate, I tell you what.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
And at the end, you give Max, your son... Now, how old is Max?
8 and a half.
8 and a half. Now, you give him credit for doing the stills photography.
Yeah.
So he was actually shooting there with your Minolta DSLR.
That's correct. What happened was I sort of decided, like, I've not done any video production of that kind of thing, like actually putting together a mini documentary before. I've never done that sort of thing ever.
Yeah.
And I have recently got my... I got a new battery for our old... Like, our video camera is not even a digital camera. It's an analog video camera. It still runs on Hi8 tape. I got a new battery for that, and I decided to myself, you know, this is something... I really want to make a good little video documentary of this event, because Kath was quite nervous about doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought to myself, okay, I'm going to shoot video, and you know, when people watch it, they'll see that I shot a little bit of footage the night before talking to Kath, how is she feeling, that kind of thing, and then some bits through the day, and then driving down in the car to the jump site, and I decided that what I would do when we got to the park where the parachutists would land, I said to Max, "Your job today is going to be to shoot with my Konica Minolta digital SLR." And being a typical 8-year-old boy, he felt like he was being ripped off, and he was like, "Oh, can't I shoot the video?" And I said, "Look, mate, you haven't shot any video before, and this is a once in a lifetime thing, and so I would prefer to shoot the video. And the thing is, I know I can trust you with my camera because I've seen you shoot with it before, and you'll do a great job."
Mm-hmm.
So I managed to placate him in that respect. And so what I did was I got my 135 f2.8 lens out and put that on the camera. And, you know, I cranked the ISO up to 400 and I set it on shutter priority, which is a mode I don't normally shoot in.
Yep.
But in this instance, because... You know, admittedly, Max is only 8 and he's still, you know, that's a heavy camera for an 8-year-old, and he gets a little bit of camera shake. And so I thought I'll put it on shutter priority and then I can crank the shutter speed up reasonably quickly. I set it to, I think it was about a 350th of a second.
Yeah.
So I figured on a 135mm focal length, 350th of a second, he should be pretty safe.
Mm.
And I took an ambient reading on the park with those settings and I got f5.6. And I thought to myself, well, that's great, because if the camera needs more light, it can open up all the way out to f2.8, you know, which is another couple of stops, and if it needs to shut down, it's got bucket loads of room to shut down. So he should be pretty much right on those settings. And so I said to him, I said, "Look, mate, there's going to be half a dozen people jumping out of this airplane. We're not going to know which one is mum until they're almost on the ground. So once we identify which one is mum, I want you to just keep the camera trained on her and just keep shooting, mate. Just hold your finger on that shutter. You won't fill up the memory card. Just keep shooting.
Yeah.
And he was an absolute trooper, and he did exactly as I asked, and he got some great shots, and he was so impressed when he saw his name in the credits at the end. He thought that was just awesome.
Oh, that's, well, you know, it's like your name coming up in lights, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's no, that's, well, you did the right thing in setting the camera up for him like that. That's really good. That is really good. And look, you know, that little motor drive sequence you show at the end of the video, he captured all of that.
Yeah.
And that's fantastic.
Do you know what? In retrospect, the only thing that I would have done differently would have been to say to him, don't stand beside me, walk around the park, you know, 20 or 30 meters, so that he would have been getting a different angle to what I was getting with the video. That's and that's a failure on my part. It was nothing that he did. He just lived up to all expectations. I'm really proud of him.
That's interesting. And, you know, as parents, I mean, I introduced Nathan to the concept of photography very, very early. I think he was 8 or 9 years old when I bought him his first SLR, and it was a Nikon FE.
Nice.
And we went to this sort of photography swap meet, and there was a Nikon FE body sitting there with amongst like 100 other cameras. People were swarming around this table, and you know, this fellow was just selling cameras left, right, and center. So I saw it there, and I just leapt across this group of people and I grabbed it.
Right.
I had a play with it and I couldn't see anything wrong. It was just an FE body. I mean, so the FE came out in the mid 70s, so it's not a
okay.
And this would have been about 1998-99 when I first, you know, got it. So it's an old camera. It's 20 years old by then, you know.
Yeah.
And but I grabbed it. It was in okay condition. Everything worked perfectly. And I just said to the fellow, you know, how much? And he was eating a sandwich and he held up four fingers. And I said, what, $400? And he said, no, 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 no. And he held up four fingers. And I said, not $4. And I said, well, how much? He says, $40. And I said, wow. Oh, beautiful. So I just grabbed $40, a slant, and it didn't have a lens. So I saw a little zoom lens there that was Nikon mount.
Yeah.
And it was medium range, like a 28-70 or 35-70 or something.
Yep.
And I held it up and I said, oh, how much is this? He says, oh, $10. So for $50, I had my son, a Nikon FE, and a zoom lens. Now, I walked, he was there actually, but he wasn't beside me. He was with his mum looking at some other stall.
Right.
And I walked up to him and I said, oh, Nathan, I had my hand behind my back. And I said, hey, buddy, I've bought you a camera. And of course, you know, the first thing he said to me.
No.
Well, the first thing he said to me, he looked at me.
Well, he certainly didn't say how many megapixels.
No, he didn't. No, he didn't. Because if he would have, it would have been like the Nikon D1. It was $10,000. It was 3 megapixels.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What did he say?
Well, he looked up to me, and with his eyes blazing with enthusiasm, he said, oh, Dad, is it a Nikon?
Oh, no. Great.
Yes, the cyclopic nature of the Mueller family when it comes to the camera we're going to buy. And I said, and I looked at him, and I said, yep, and here it is. And I handed him this SLR, you know. Yeah. Oh, look, he just lost it. He just went absolutely nuts. And he fixed the strap up, and we're walking back to the car, you know, after we'd finished buying everything we could. And he's got this, you know, this Nikon hanging off him. And you should have seen him. There he is, 8 or 9 years old, walking down the street with his Nikon. And he was like glowing, man, you know. Look at me, I'm like my dad, you know. it was just fantastic. And here's the other thing that's interesting. A couple of months later, we went to the Floriade in Canberra.
Yep.
Canberra, for those who aren't Australian, is our capital city, and every year they have a flower festival, you might say, and there's tulips and colorful flowers everywhere. It's amazing. But I was asked to come up and speak at the Australian Photographic Society convention, so I went up there, and it was held at the time of the Floriade because they wanted the photographers up there to photograph it and take advantage of it, so it was all timed perfectly.
Yeah.
Well, there was a gentleman there by the name of John Swainson, who is in the Australian photographic industry very well known for his contributions in so many fields of Australian photography. He was the head of, or he ran Maxwell's, which he still does. At the time, they were the Australian importer of Nikon. So anyway, knowing John very well, I walked up to him and said, "G'day, mate, nice to see you here." And we shook hands and chewed the fat and all the rest of it. And then my son walked up with his FE around his, you know, proudly hanging around his neck. And I introduced Nathan to, I said, "Oh, Nathan, this is Mr. Swainson. And he's the boss of Nikon in Australia." Oh, well, you know, Nathan just, wow, you know. But John, a tall, very sort of deep-voiced man, you know, he leaned down and he said, "Now, Nathan, is that a Nikon you've got?" And Nathan very proudly, "Oh, yes, of course, you know." And he said, "You know, the FE is one of the best cameras Nikon ever made, and I know professionals who are still using it." You know, oh, well, Nikon, Nathan just suddenly felt, you know. And all of this is just good memories. I think if we are, you know, like you've done with Max and like I've done with Nathan, I think photography is perhaps the best hobby you could ever introduce to your children, apart from maybe music or guitar or something like that.
Yeah,
there's something about introducing the concept of creating images to your children that really opens up their eyes to the world around them, and it's just a fantastic hobby. If you're listening to this podcast and you have done the same thing, let us know, because and what the experiences that you've had in introducing photography to your children have been. Because for mine, it's brought my son and I closer together. You know, when we went to Canada and did that road trip together.
Yep.
You know, we were not just father and son. My son and I are very, very close. But we were, so not only could we share the bond of our relationship, but we shared the common goal of photographing the Rocky Mountains together. And then we ended our Canadian Rocky Mountain road trip with photographing the wedding that I did in Edmonton.
Yep.
And now, of course, he's coming on my workshops with me, and he's shooting weddings with me. He's been asked to be the Richard Annables assistant, you know, Richard took him on a wedding recently, and that was great. They did the My Little Buttercup routine from the Three Amigos together for the bride and groom. That's the name. You know, if you've met my son, you've met me. If you've met me, you've met my son. Right. Except he's younger than me, and his nose is even bigger than mine. But apart from that, you know, he's the same as me. And I'm really glad that he's fallen in love with the concept of photography. I mean, he's got other interests, but it's just such a great hobby to, you know, to give. So I hope you do the same with Max. I'm quite sure you will.
Oh, absolutely.
Is he taken with the concept?
Oh, as far as I know, yes. I mean, I know that he just loves getting my camera out every opportunity that he gets. So I'm hoping he will take to it, and I think that he will. Particularly if, you know, like I said last week, you know, we're planning to get him a digital SLR.
Mm.
You know, once he's got one and we can go out together, I'm sure then that, you know, he'll really get a taste for it, you know.
Yeah. Now, so, are you planning on getting him the Sony because you're the Minolta shooter? Or?
I don't know yet. We'll probably start him off with whatever we can get cheaply, you know, come that time of year. It may be that we get him into a Pentax or something like that.
Yeah.
Just something even entry level.
Wouldn't your lenses work on a Sony, though? I mean,
well,
at least
yes, they would. They
interchangeability.
Would. That's a good point. That is a good point, actually, that if we did get him a Sony body, then he could use my lenses. So,
well, even if you got him a Sony kit, I mean, they're not expensive. The lower level sort of Sony introductory level of DSLRs are very good. They produce a great picture. And,
I have no doubt, yeah.
And they are, you know, compatible with what you've already got in terms of lenses.
Yeah.
That way, it just makes sense that you and he can go out and share lenses. And except the problem is he'll always have the lens you want.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, he'll walk off and he'll have your 135-28, and you'll be going, "Don't," you know, which can be a real pain, of course, because you know, you don't want to have to buy the same lens twice. But usually, the lens that you're in love with is the lens you'll teach your son to be in love with. You see, that's where I made my mistake. You know, I should have told Nathan my favorite lens was my 10 to 20 mil or something instead of my 85 or my 180, you know? The interesting thing is that when we went to Canada, Nathan and I did a lot of landscape photography. And he's been on annual photography trips with me and the boys since he was about 11. And we usually just end up driving around someplace in Australia doing landscapes and etc. So that's all he's really ever known as a photographer. And I never thought about it too much. But he started working for a photo retailer in Melbourne. And he's become, you know, and so being in the environment has kindled his enthusiasm for photography. But having come on a couple of workshops with me, wherein I deal with the subject of people photography, he's really fallen in love with that. Now, maybe it's because I get very pretty and models, and he is, he's only 17, 18 years old. So, what young man gets to work with professional models at the age of 17 or 18? But no, he actually has fallen in love with people photography. So his favorite lenses also, as I was saying, all kidding aside,
is your 85 1.8.
And my 180 2.8, my 180's become, I'd love a 135 2.8 actually, because I'd love a prime between those two lenses. Having gone to the D700 now with a larger sensor, I like a little more pull. I still use the 85 a lot, but I'd love to get a 135 f2 or 2.8, so which I eventually will. But every time I'm running this workshop, and every time I want to take a photograph, Nathan's run up with my 85 or my 180. So, but it is interesting that he's fallen in love with that kind of photography, people photography, and he's very good at it. So maybe it's a like father, like son thing, but it is interesting that, if you're going to introduce the concept of photography, give them as many options to photograph as many different kinds of things as possible, because you never know where their interests are going to lie.
Yeah.
I'll photograph anything, but admittedly, my favorite thing is to photograph people in some way, shape, or form. So he has found the same thing. But it really has been a wonderful, ride, his love of photography and watching that grow. And I'm looking forward to working a lot with him. He and I are now actually looking to hire to get some studio space together.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, look, we're not exactly sure how that's going to go. Recessive times, I'm sure that there are, small factory spaces that are very reasonably priced, and I'm hoping that we'll be able to. I don't necessarily want anything flash, but it's been a long time since I've had a studio because the nature of my work has changed with the magazine, etc.
Sure.
But I really would love to get back into, having the right space to do the right kind of photography for my clients and for myself. So we're going to look at setting up something like that. He is really fired up on that idea.
Awesome.
So, yeah, you never know. You never know. It could be an interesting thing. But as with Max, mate, you've got him young and what better hobby could you suggest that he take up? We've talked about this before, kids getting stuck behind gaming screens and things like that.
Yeah.
When there's a big, beautiful world out there, if you want to look at a screen, mate, look at the one on the back of your camera and see the image you've just created and the experience you've just had that is real and not virtual, you know?
So, and the great thing about that whole process is that not only is it a creative process, but you also end up with something tangible. Even if it's a digital file, it's still something tangible you can print out and hang on the wall and appreciate for the next 20 years of your life.
Yep.
It's, playing with a game console, it's like, they're enthused with the game that came out this week, and suddenly the game that they absolutely couldn't live without 12 months ago is now past history.
Oh, it's old fashioned. Yeah. The graphics on it are terrible. Oh,
fracking awful.
Yeah. Right. That's right. And then you have to buy the whole new one. Whereas, photography, that doesn't happen. And the experiences are real, Other than just beating your last score, real.
Before we started recording again, I was saying there was something kicking around in my head.
Yes.
It was because last night my copy of Peter Eastway's magazine arrived, Better Photoshop Techniques.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And in there is it's actually like a 4-page advertorial, at least that's the way it appeared, for the Leica M8.
Yes.
Have you seen this thing?
I have seen the Leica M8.
Do they pronounce it mate? Or is it pronounced M8?
Got a Leica mate. No, I have never heard it pronounced mate, but
wondered.
Look, I've heard that, between you, me, and the thousands of people who listen to this podcast, that it is anything but your mate.
Oh, okay.
The reports on it that I have heard and read and seen have been that
not very user-friendly?
No, not very user-friendly, and the images out of it, skin tones and things like that, just not, you know, good. There have been photographers who've taken it, you know, as to Afghanistan and all sorts of things, and used it the way photojournalists were intended to use it, and have just said, no, what a dog of a thing to use.
Now, really?
These are only reports that I've read and spoken to photographers. I spoke to a very well-known Australian photographer here who has been a film shooter up until, well, only about 3 years ago. And he swore, you know, by Leicas, and he's always used the Leicas, you know, the M6 and et cetera, et cetera. He loves them, and why not? I mean, these cameras were magnificent. And they are magnificent. We say were, but they are magnificent cameras. And, you know, they're film-based, so I suppose that's what you're... But the M6 and et cetera was just a beautiful piece of gear. I'd love one. So when the M8 came out, Leica approached him and said, here, use this. You know, we know you love our Leica products. We know that you are a film shooter, but we reckon, you know, you'll love this. It's a digital Leica, you know, it's a digital rangefinder. And he took it and he shot with it. And for someone who, he just went right off them. Now, he's a Leica devotee. So for him, this was an extreme disappointment. Because the images out of it that were just terrible. And this is a photographer, I won't mention him by name, but this is a photographer who really knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
And no, he was not impressed. If you've had a different experience or you've read different reports with the M8, I'd really like to know. But it's an expensive piece of gear for what it fails to produce. So right. I have told.
Okay, yeah. Well, like I said, the four when I say four pages, like two double spreads, you know,
yep,
back to back, it was very complimentary of the camera, but if, as I suspect, it was a paid advertorial, then you would expect nothing less. But having heard you raving on about your little rangefinder that you took, I think you took one to Vietnam with you, was it?
Yes.
Yes,
an old Petri.
Right. It just sort of reminded me, I guess, of the rangefinders and you talking about it on the podcast all those months ago. And I thought, oh, I must talk to Shelton about that and see what his impressions are, whether he's heard anything about it, used it or whatever. So,
I would like nothing less. I would like nothing more, I mean, than to own a camera like that because they're such beautiful things. The range, just the whole operation is just so classic and I love it. I mean, it's very expensive. They're thousands and thousands of dollars. And I mean, for that kind of money, I could get myself a D3,
yeah,
you know, Nikon D3, which would be far more functional for me, or two more D700s, or a D700 and a, you know, beautiful piece of glass or whatever. I could, you know, it'd be far more practical.
Yeah.
These are cameras that are made for the elite, for, you know, your Nikon devotees, and they are a gorgeous piece of gear, but apparently as image makers, they left a little bit deep to be desired. Interestingly, the Panasonic versions of the Leica cameras get rave reviews, but there are some who say that the Leica versions do not.
Well,
and,
funny you should start mentioning other manufacturers, because I was just about to ask you, who's made the sensor technology that's inside the Leica?
Well, as far as I know, it's Panasonic, but the and that goes for both, and I could be wrong, please correct me, but the Leica, you know, and Panasonic work together to produce both Leica and Panasonic cameras.
Right.
And if you, you know, hold the comparison models side by side, you'll see no cosmetic difference other than the you know, the Leica one has the Leica badge and the Panasonic one has the Panasonic badge.
Right.
But in I discussed this with one of the fellows here who, you know, imports Leica, and he was saying to me that the difference in the two cameras, there are slight differences in the technology, but mainly the difference is how the JPEGs are processed. And you know, the Leica has a different way of rendering the image as to the Panasonic. So, but you know, the Panasonics are getting rave reviews. Now, Panasonic don't have an M8. You know, they don't have a Panasonic version of the M8. But it would be interesting to see what would happen if they did. I don't think Leica would let them, if you know what I mean. But
right,
be
do Leica
to see.
Own the technology for range finding? Is that what you mean, or?
No, I think they've used the, you know, their own body design and all that kind of thing, and
right.
Panasonic possibly have done the electronics. I couldn't really tell you. I only know that the Panasonics in Australia are going through the roof in sales because they're half the price or two-thirds of the price of the Leicas. Half, I think, actually. And yet, essentially, the same camera.
Panasonic only do compacts, though, don't they? They're not in the SLR market.
Oh, they are moving into the SLR market.
Right.
In terms of the electronic SLR, the bridge camera, not the interchangeable lens SLR.
Oh, okay, as in like the prosumer type.
Yes, yep. Exactly. And they get also excellent reviews. I think, to be honest with you, and I'll say this, you know, as honestly as I possibly can, I think there have been some companies in this digital revolution that have been pretty stupid and, you know, have not been as smart as they should be. And Leica, in my opinion, is one of those companies. With a name like them, not to have latched onto the digital revolution as quickly, and then not to have vast differences between their cameras and, you know, not to produce. To have a camera that does not produce well for Leica is a death knell.
Mm.
They are bringing out a new range of cameras. I think it's they're a larger sort of SLR. And, you know, I mean, these kind of things are going to be 40-odd grand or whatever. But if they fail to produce, man, I tell you what. And again, will people buy them? Or will, as per usual, Leica devotees and the rich, you know, photographers who love their Leicas, will they be the only ones who buy them? I just think that there's a lot of scope there for them to, you know,
fall flat on their face.
Yeah, fall flat on their face or rock this world.
Yeah.
But they seem to, you know, they used to be the camera. And, they have a lot to be desired in the digital world. I hope they pick up their act because it would be just another icon that's fought like Minolta, you know, that's fallen foul of the digital age. And, what can I say? I just hope that they really... come up with the goods on this new one. Hopefully there's an M8 or an M9 coming out that will just put to rest all the complaints that have happened about the M8. Now, like I say, if you've heard differently about the M8, I have not shot with one. All I know is that the photographers that I've spoken to and the reports that I've read on the M8,
I would tend to put a little more credence in, you know, the opinions of a working photographer than in the opinions of a paid advertorial in a magazine, to be honest.
I mean, I've read the advertorial, I've seen it, and it talks a lot about the technology and that kind of thing. But if I remember correctly, the photographs that are in that advertorial are monochrome images, if I remember correctly.
Most of them were, yes.
Yeah. Because apparently the skin tones and the colors are not that great. But again, I preface this by saying this is only what I've heard. But the photographer who spoke to me was not someone who was anti-Leica. He was seriously pro-Leica.
Yeah.
So this was a major disappointment for him. And that's why I'm prepared to take his word on board as being, you know...
accurate.
Yes, accurate. Yeah. And unbiased, if anything. Because he had every chance to really sell that thing to me. You know, and he didn't want to. And not sell it to me literally, but...
But sell the concept to you, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, there you go. That's the M8. You're thinking of buying one, Bruce?
No, not at all. I don't even know how much they cost, but I would imagine it would be a lot. But
seven or eight grand or something.
Really? There. For the body only, I'm assuming.
Yeah, a body and lens basic kit, I think. And then, you know, you're really restricted with what they can do.
Yeah.
And for that, like I say, I can get myself a nice Nikon D3 or... you know, a D700 and a really nice piece of glass, or I can travel to some really cool place and use the camera I already have.
Yeah.
So, look, I think you've got to be a serious devotee. And, you know, but hey, I love the operate. I love the way these cameras work. And, you know, hopefully they'll come back with something really, really cool. But anyway, you know, that's the report. Now we're going to talk about something that has come up on my forum recently, on 5 Minute Photographer, and I'll just mention it very quickly because I'd love to get. We have talked about this once before, and then we'll let everybody go. But a subject came up on the 5-Minute Photographer forum called Am I in Trouble? And a lady posts this, you know, problem that she went to Avalon Air Show, which is held in Victoria every year. And it's our annual air show. And she was walking around, you know, photographing things and, you know, photographing people and getting some candid shots. And she says, I was confronted today by a father who told me I had no right to photograph his daughter, who was approximately 6 years old. She was watching the air show from his shoulders and also dancing in the rain with an umbrella. She was cute as a button. I politely went through my spiel and showed him and gave him my business card. I also showed him that I'm an Australian Photographic Society member and reassured him that I was well within my rights as a photographer to do so and had no devious intent. And then she said that she'd email pictures to him, etc., etc., etc. He backed off a bit after she says she reassured him about the use of the images and that kind of thing. But she says, I'm a little concerned as I don't know, I don't think that I've heard the end of it. And she's concerned that, you know, he can follow through legally. Well, in Australia, he had no right, actually. He does have no right to ask you to stop taking photographs of his daughter because it's a public place. And in Australia, if you're in the public, you are, it's open slather and you have no rights. If somebody's photographing you, to go up and say, don't photograph me. That is the law. And you actually can't, in a public place, prevent anyone from taking your picture.
Obviously, as photographers, we take the, you know, the request of a member of the public not to be photographed and honour that.
Yes.
But
yes.
But what you're saying is that legally we are permitted to keep shooting if we choose to.
If we so choose to. And, I mean, naturally, be diplomatic, be friendly. We don't have to start any wars here. And if you don't have to take the photograph, don't take the photograph. But if you think, you know, but if someone comes up to you in a public place and says you have no right to take photographs, you actually do. It's where you enter onto public or private property that you have a problem. But if you're on public property or at a public event, you know, or in the streets, you have, it's, there's no law in Australia that says you can't take somebody's picture. If you use that picture for commercial purposes, hey, that's a different thing altogether.
Yeah.
You know, if this member of 5-Minute Photographer went off and sold these cute kitty photos to a magazine or advertising the Avalon Air Show or something like that, it would be a completely different thing altogether.
For sure.
But if she's taken them for, you know, her own use, private use, or, you know, to put, you know, put up on her, her camera club competition or something like that, that's a completely different thing altogether. I just wanted to know what people were thinking along these lines and whether they'd had any issues. On my forum at 5-Minute Photographer, it's actually raised quite a stir, and many people are complaining about the fact that we as photographers are being treated as terrorists, pedophiles,
criminals,
freaks. You know, we're being called intrusive and all that kind of thing. Have you had an experience like this? And in this and in that experience, what have you done to either, you know, defuse the situation, or perhaps, you know, have you been able to defuse the situation? Were you ordered to put your camera down? Did you have to put your camera down? Were you threatened with legalities or physical violence? Anything like that? I just think the whole thing is ridiculous. It's a post 9/11 knee-jerk reaction, but we have to remember that 9/11 was 8 years ago, almost.
Don't remind me.
Yeah, I know time flies. But, you know, and you don't want to get started on all of that. But, look, if you've had something like that happen to you, I'd like to know what country you're in and what the laws are, whether you've had a chance to research it, and what we can perhaps or should perhaps do as an international photographic community to let the world know that we are just the same as we've ever been. You know, we're the same people we were 20 years ago. We're the same people we were 10 years ago. We just like to take pictures wherever we go, and we're not pedophiles and we're not terrorists.
Yeah.
You know, it really has raised quite a stir on the forum, and I'm really interested to find out who's had these experiences and, you know, what their responses were, what difficulties they've encountered.
It's probably the usual story of it's one bad apple that ruins the barrel.
Yes. Yes. You know. Well, you know, in the case, I mean, there are pedophiles with cameras and there are terrorists. But, you know, the whole concept of photographing a military installation is ridiculous because, hey, Google Earth will tell them everything they want to know.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? And so, I mean, really, it's crazy. So I just think that it's ridiculous, and I'd like to have it, you know, I'd like to have it stopped. I don't like walking through, you know, the city or walking, going down to the beach or whatever with a camera and feeling, you know, that people are staring at me with some sort of insinuation as to my intention. No, I'm just a photographer, and I always have been.
I have an interesting, well, I think it's an interesting question, and that is, for someone like yourself who is a keen photographer of people, you know, in their own environments, and, you know, just getting those great candids of people, do you ever find yourself later on, you know, whether it be weeks or months later, wishing that you had a model release signed, you know, for some of those images? And if that was the case, is there any way that you would ever be able to track down the subjects that you shot?
Yes, I do actually wish that there are so many travel photographs that I've taken for which I wish I had model releases, simply because I know that they'd make very saleable images on stock on the internet stock libraries,
right.
And they won't accept them if they don't come with a model release,
right.
Which is fair enough because they've got their backsides to cover, and that's okay. Look, the chances of the, you know, the man who sold me a handmade knife in the Kashgar market ever seeing a photograph that, you know, was taken here in a magazine or a poster in you know, that appears in Australia are slim, but nonetheless, the stock libraries, you know, will not accept them unless they're model released. So yes, I do, but then there's the problem of, well, you've got a candid image. You've got the image already. What do? You walk up the person after you photograph them and say, oh, by the way, I've just surreptitiously taken your photograph. Do you mind if I get you to sign this model release? Which is a very difficult thing to do because I also don't speak Chinese or Vietnamese or, you know, or Spanish or whatever the language might be where I am. So, you know, I speak English, I speak smatterings of German, and I speak fluent Australian Sign Language. That's it. So unless the person falls into those categories, I'm really, you know, I'm up the creek. So, yes, I do, to answer your question. Get whatever model releases you can, especially if you're a member of iStock Photo or one of those other, you know, large libraries, because sometimes these images are so saleable. And, you know, you don't get a model release.
So do you have a photocopy of your, you know, your model release form, and do you keep half a dozen of them in your camera bag at all times?
I do now, yes.
Yeah, right.
I do now. And I forgot to get one for the model that I worked with on Saturday, now that you remind me. I did a Creative People Photography workshop on Saturday, and I forgot to get a model release because I took some... Yep, dope. I took some great pictures of Lisa. If you go to my Flickr site, you'll see them.
Right.
I'm really pleased with them. And she was a great, lovely girl and great to work with. So, yes, I'll have to...
Well, probably in an instance like that, she'd probably still be happy to sign one even after the event.
A model is used for signing model releases. So, yes, I'll chase her up and get a model release from her. But you're absolutely right. Oh, and by the way, hello, Cameron, who's listening probably to this because he's a regular listener to Shutters Inc.
Excellent.
Turns up at my workshop. He's one of these quiet sort of guys, quiet achieving guys. Turns up at my workshop and, you know, spends the whole day photographing and, you know, learning and all the rest of it and having a great time like we always do. And then comes up to me, shakes my hand at the end and says, oh, it was really nice to put a face to the guy from Shutters Inc. You know, so he's a listener. He's, you know, he's been hearing my voice for ages. And then finally, at the end of the day, I find out that he already knows a fair bit about who I am and, you know, is a Shutters Inc. listener. So if you do turn up to one of my workshops, please let me know that you listen to Shutters Inc. because, you know,
at the beginning of the day.
Yeah, at the beginning of the day. That would be nice. You know, it's nice to know who's on your side. Considering especially that Saturday started off so badly, it's not funny. I turn up, there's no screen, the projector and the computer won't talk to each other. Oh man, it was just terrible. So we got it all sorted out in the end, but my workshop started so late as a result. But everybody was so great, you know, and they had a good time, and we just extended the workshop for an extra hour, so they got the same amount of shooting time. But but normally, if you want to come to my workshops, they're far better than that, you know. Well, that was a great workshop. It just took a little bit of time to get organized. So anyway, hello, Cameron, and anybody else who's listening to this podcast who has been on my workshops or is planning on coming to one of my workshops in the future. So if you're in Australia, if you're in Melbourne particularly, if you go to the Camera House website or the Croydon Camera House website or the Camera Action website, you will be able to jump onto my workshops or just contact me. And you know, you'll be able to come along. Did I mention on the last podcast that Camera House Australia have now initiated their phototraining.com.au website?
No.
Well, it's interesting because they flew me up to Sydney to spend a couple of days filming with them. And because they put together this website at phototraining.com.au. And yours truly is the guy who does all the videos.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, you can. It's a paid website. I think they charge $39.95 Australian or something for the subscription to this website for a year. But, yeah, there's videos, and I'm basically talking to camera, and it's, you know, I've got a head for radio. I always They wanted me to come up and speak to the camera, so I did for 2 days. So, yes, I am the official face. Not a great face, but I am the official face of the phototraining.com.au website in terms of their tutorial videos. So that's really nice.
Awesome.
So if you do want to put a face to this really, you know, an ugly face to this really fabulous voice, go to phototraining.com.au and you know, give that a, have a look at that.
Excellent.
And basically, that's all the news I have for this week. For next podcast, I'm going to come up with some really cool subject. I'm going to have to. Really, really cool subject.
Well, look, in Shelton's defense, it is Tuesday night. It is very early in the week. We normally record on a Thursday or a Friday night. And so because it's Tuesday night, the previous episode of Shuttered Zinc has only been up on the podcast for 48 hours. And so we've not had any response to the last episode yet, so we were kind of struggling a little bit. Hence why we just had a bit of a free-form discussion this week, which...
Hope you don't mind.
I don't mind, so hopefully the listeners don't. So.
Well, I think they would consider it as like they were just catching up with a couple of old friends.
Exactly.
You know? I hope so anyway, because, you know... That's the way we should feel right now after all these episodes, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, mate, thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
And we will catch up with you again next week. Don't forget, if you've got anything you want to discuss or you would like Shelton to discuss in future episodes, please send us some email, either studio@audiotu.com or shelton@audiotu.com. And we'll talk with you next week.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, mate.
All right, mate. See ya.
See you soon.
Now, how much of that did you understand?
Audio to You delivers the best quality podcasts direct to your desktop or portable. You be the boss. Hear what you want to hear.
When you want to hear.
Hit us today. And remember, Control D to bookmark. AudioToYou.com.
It's all over, Marge. It's all over.